Today is Tuesday, February 20th. Wow, February goes quick.
February's short. And yesterday, of course, if you have a job that respects federal holidays, you had a day off. A day when we remember that we should always trust our authoritarian rulers because they're good people and they have our best interests in mind and they don't really make mistakes, even if they were slavers.
President's Day. Well, our first story is a follow-up. I don't even. That's going to be my new thing. I don't even.
You're going to give up? I don't know.
I'm going to give up. It would be impossible for me to give up. I don't know.
You should adopt a whole range of I don't blank.
Well, I already said I don't know with like 50 different cadences. So I can really slide them in there.
Branch it out.
James Damore. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. This is a follow-up in case I didn't hear this. If you follow us, you know what this is. But for those of you that don't. There was a guy that worked for Google, and he issued a memo that said that Google is basically an echo chamber for, I don't really want to describe it because any description would be inaccurate. I'm already off track. It's already a mess.
He didn't like the fact that, Google went out of its way to empower the minorities that work there. Women, trans people, what have you. And he surmise that perhaps there are biological differences between women and men, and they didn't like that. So he sued them thinking that, you know, hey, I stated a fact, which he believes is a fact. Some people do, some people don't. And he believed he had a lawsuit there. Well, it's been ruled that that's not the case. And by the letter of the law, he probably should have had a lawsuit. But they've ruled this commission. I can't remember what it's called.
This is the Labor Board Commission.
Yeah, they've ruled that what he said was basically hate speech, and it doesn't get any traction. Sorry.
I like that they were very, very careful to point out that some of what he said in the memo is, in fact, protected speech. Like, he could not be fired for some of what he said in the memo. But Google was very, very careful in crafting the reasons for his dismissal, and the reasons that they stated for his dismissal did not include any of the specific protected items from his memo. So that is why the National Labor Board found that no wrongdoing has occurred here. And this is not really like a court of law kind of thing. This is more just like a labor oversight, like do companies act fairly when hiring and firing people? And they found that, yes, in this case, it was fair.
I think he, like you say, had some points in some ways. He should have known better than to say that. I mean, you got to read the tea leaves sometimes. The world is not a fair place. And you have to know where you're going. Read the weather. You don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind blows, as a famous musician said. But it seems a little disingenuous to be like, I don't believe that you should make these arbitrary rules and lord over us and have all these policies. So I'm going to go to the government for help.
There's a little bit of irony there. Yeah, I hadn't considered that.
The court system. No. But he knows Google has deep pockets and, yeah. Shoot for the stars, I guess. He is he's going about it a different route, a different kind of lawsuit now. So I'm sure that'll get shot down too.
I'm sure there's going to be many more follow-ups about this. I wonder if there are any in Google that are secretly like on his side, but they can't say anything. Because those people will just eventually quietly yeah. leave the company.
I mean, really can't say anything. If they do feel that way, I'm sure it's like Nazi Germany. And like they won't even tell their closest friends. It's like, nope, keeping that a total secret.
It's pretty crazy when you can't even discuss things in any kind of rational civil discourse that's like, no, this, you know, you're thinking that there's a biological difference here is not really the case. It appears to be biological, but it is in fact just because society is so universal in the way that it raises the two different genders or, you know, whatever other alternative explanation that there might be.
No.
Yeah. Intel has been hit with 32 lawsuits over security flaws. This is, of course, relating to Spectre and Meltdown. This is only the tip of the iceberg, folks. There have been more updates for Spectre and Meltdown. This is probably going to be a follow-up that you see every single week. A lot of this lawsuits are not, they're not all exactly the same. Some of them have to do with how Intel handled the disclosure. Some of them are to do with the vulnerabilities themselves. Some of them are to do with remuneration for how Intel is going to you know, deal with the fact that it's got old silicon out there that's vulnerable, and they're really not doing a great job dealing with that.
One of them is actually stock price. So two people, the Google notified Intel in July, and some people were like, hey, I bought stock after July. You should have told me. And so they're saying.
Neat. We also mentioned Snapchat had a redesign. Snapchat has got a petition on its hand that has 1 million signatures from its users saying, hey, you should probably roll back the UI. We don't like the new Snapchat UI.
Yeah, people have been getting old images of the app and going through a lot of trouble to install them. People really, really hate this new UI, but I think it's falling on deaf ears. Yeah. Because Snapchat didn't do this because they wanted to improve their product. They did this because they weren't making money, and they need to make money.
Into the arms of Instagram they go.
If you want to vote, change.org is not the way to do it. Uninstall Snapchat is the way to do it.
And everything Facebook. Oh, wait.
For different reasons. But I think the younger kids ran from Facebook to Snapchat.
Yeah.
So. Oh.
Which is just... Kaspersky has filed another lawsuit saying, hey, we should not be on a ban list because we didn't actually do anything wrong in terms of its use as a software antivirus product within the federal government.
This was a second tier of the ban. It's really some minutiae in here as to what's different, but they've sued again. When you get right down to it, the simple way of explaining this is there is this rule that you can't create laws that target a very specific group of people. Even if the law doesn't state that it's targeting that specific group of people. You know, like, let's say we had a really, really, really cold part of the country, like all year round, just icy, horrible, and you pass a law, it's like, you're not allowed to wear fur all year round. Then that wouldn't be okay, because it's like, hey, clearly this is a... So Kaspersky is saying, the wording of the law doesn't say, you know, you're targeting us individually, but what other Russian companies, software or otherwise, are being affected by this? You're only hurting us.
It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. It's going to be interesting to see how, if at all, the product changes and the product changes hands. I mean, the standard MO, like stuff like this has come up before in the past. Stuff like this came up a lot in the late 80s and early 90s because of software companies and the software game and the rise of personal computers. And then the way to deal with it was that the foreign national company would simply just open up offices in like San Francisco or New York and employ a couple local people, and those people would be responsible for distributing and managing the product domestically.
Doesn't Kaspersky do that?
They do that.
Yeah, so doesn't matter.
Senator Ron Wyden has been grilling the FBI chief on encryption. Now, I really like this. This is kind of a summary. This is kind of a follow-up. We didn't really cover a lot of the like blow-by-blow stories, but there's kind of a milestone here that you should be aware of. So this is kind of new information, kind of a follow-up. He wrote a letter to the greats, the seminal greats of encryption. So like Hellman, like Diffie-Hellman encryption. Hellman, that guy, those guys are still alive. It would be like digging up Washington and asking him political questions. Like, so, what do you think about what's going on, George Washington? How is this, you know? Turns out that with encryption is so new and the computing industry moves so quickly that, you know, like the RSA, those guys are still pretty much alive, most of them. And you can ask them what's going on with encryption. And so Ron Wyden says, you know, we're getting a lot of rhetoric from our FBI chief about how we can have encryption that has a backdoor, and the encryption somehow knows the difference between a law enforcement request for third-party access and criminal requests for third-party access. You guys have any idea what algorithm that FBI chief is talking about? And the letter answer from the giants in the encryption industry is, no, there doesn't exist an encryption algorithm that does that. And we'd like to look at it too, because we'd like to know how valid it is. So yeah, that's pretty nice. I just like that.
Well, of course, it's basically satire.
Yeah.
That can't exist. It's impossible. But I like how it's sort of the wordplay. The theme is you trade your freedom for security. That's all modern governments, I think, are basically on that track. You have too many freedoms. It's dangerous. You must give them up so that we can secure you from drugs, terrorism, what have you. And...
low-priced Disney movies. We've got to secure you from that. But that is a high priority.
But when you think about it in this context, you're trading security for security. I mean, think about that. How Orwellian is that?
At least one person, at least one senator kind of gets it. And it's like, okay, you say this can be done. Let's get some technical details as to how this can be done. And the answer is it can't be.
But of course they know that. I think you have to keep these talking points hot. You have to keep the public afraid.
Oh, that sounds reasonable. Yeah, as somebody who knows nothing about encryption.
And then you get your real way, which is they just want a back door. They don't care how it affects anything.
And that's bad. Really bad.
I'm probably going to get it.
Facebook must stop tracking Belgian users, a court has ruled. So this is exciting. If you're in Belgium, Facebook has to stop tracking you, or it's going to face a fine of 250,000 euros a day.
Well, they're going to appeal. I don't know what the rule is in Belgium. Does the law stop during the appeal, or does it keep going during the appeal? There's different. I think the EU keeps going, right?
Yeah, I think the European Union will give you the benefit of the doubt, but if you turn out to be wrong, it's kind of dire consequences.
Now, this, of course, is about how Facebook has the like buttons and all the other infrastructure so that they follow you everywhere. And they're saying that violates a lot of laws.
People don't expect that. People don't expect your technology to spy on you everywhere you go or every website you visit.
They found two instances where those people didn't even have Facebook accounts, but Facebook knew who they were and was tracking them anyway, which is impressive.
A federal judge says embedding a tweet can be copyright infringement. This will be appealed, and this will probably be overturned.
You hope. So this was a case of a photographer taking a picture and then someone else taking that picture and tweeting it. And then someone else embedding that tweet in a web page. And so the original photographer went after the person with the web page, not Twitter, not the tweeter who originally took the picture. And this judge actually is upholding this and saying that's copyright infringement.
It's there needs to be some exceptions carved out here, obviously, but I'm not totally I kind of get how the judge sees this. Like, if you're a photographer and you want to post your work online, and it's like, if I were the photographer and I tweeted it and it's like, hey, contact me for use rights in your media publication, it would be nice if I could disable embedding. But
the photographer didn't tweet it.
Yeah. So it's a little bit weird in this situation.
Yeah. It's sort of like this $20 bill that you just tried to buy gas with was used to buy cocaine. So you're going to jail on drug charges.
Getty Images already has a lot of case law that's kind of like this, where some collection of images includes a Getty image, and it's like, well, I bought a license to use that image from this thing, and then Getty Images shows up and says, no, that's our image. They didn't have a license to use the image. You got to pay anyway. And it's something about trafficking and stolen property or whatever. It's a huge mess in U.S. copyright law.
Oh, that sounds a lot like the mafia.
It definitely does, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, the FCC, there's an FCC watchdog that has been looking into changes that benefited Sinclair Broadcasting. So apparently, I mean, there have been some clickbait headlines around the internet that says that Ajit Pai is being investigated for fraud. This is what they're talking about.
Yeah, he championed some changes to how mergers work and things like that that were very specific. And then very shortly after he pushed that through, Sinclair Broadcasting did exactly what he just made legal.
Well,
that was previously not.
Don't you think it was like a week? Like the thing happened, and then it was a $6.9 billion deal or something like that. And it was put together in a week.
You don't get that done in a week. So, I don't see how anybody is not totally aware of what Ajit Pai is and what he's up to. Yes, of course he's doing what he was accused of. Of course. Who can't see that?
Here's how they're going to wriggle out of it. I'm going to make this prediction. I know nothing about the case. I haven't looked at any discovery or anything like that, but I've been in the game long enough. They're going to say, it's like, well, you know, we were exploring a merger for years, and we put all the work together, and then we discovered that the legal requirements were such that we couldn't actually merge. And so, yes, we did do all this work beforehand, before the ruling. And then it was just serendipity that this thing happened with Ajit Pai, and we were able to just pull this plan out that we've been working on for years and put the $6.9 billion deal, because we were ready to sign. It's just that we didn't realize that there was this legal, like our legal team was asleep at the helm, and they didn't tell us until the 11th hour that we couldn't do this. So that's how it's going to go.
The main guy, the investigator, his comments in that story were interesting because It seemed like he was really gung-ho to do this, but he was hitting a lot of walls
trying to do this. Can't imagine why.
Yeah. Ajit Pai to me is, you know, like in movies and TV where there's that one really evil, really manipulative character. And the you know, the director and the writer, they're really heavy-handed about showing you how evil they are, but somehow the characters don't see it. It's like, what? like Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. It's like, it's really in your face, but like in some scenes, he's just like, and but somehow nobody knows.
It's like, I just, well, he gloats about it too. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I did this thing. There's nothing you're going to do to stop me. And it's like, okay, sounds good. That's what we're at here. So Seattle, there's a surveillance system or public safety tool. Seattle is dismantling its controversial wireless mesh network. Now, this is something we reported on a while back. It gathers, what was it, license plate data and cell phone data, mobile, and things like that. Yeah. They decided that they weren't really sure what to do with all the data, so they're going to pay yet more money to take it out after they put it in.
Well, they put it in before they got the approval from a city council or whoever. And the city council was like, well, we don't want this. So they spent, what was it? $13 million or
yeah, it was $3.6 million
of dollars. Million or something like that. These, of course, probably some federal money in there. Some taxpayers paid for that. And then they sort of, people went a little crazy and they're like, all right, fine. We'll turn it off for a while. And then it's been off for a year or something like that. And they're not going to let them turn it back on. So now we're just going to tear it down, sell it for parts.
I guess that's good, but it should not have gone in the first place. This might be one of the idealistic things. It's like, well, if we get it in place, they'll depend on it. We can't live without it. So.
It's good, but it's only good, you know, like they did a terrible thing and then they charged us money to stop doing it.
Is anybody going to be charged with fraud or waste for wasting all that taxpayer dollars?
Of course not. No? That person's already been promoted.
They're going to be running it, and the next time we do that, they're going to get away with it.
That's just how it works. Boiling the frog.
A German court has ruled that Facebook's use of personal data is illegal. So this is another sort of European Union loss for Facebook. It makes you really wondering what they're... I mean, I see all these, like, because we're in the States, I see all these stories about Facebook doing... And there's a lot of really crazy stuff that comes out of discovery from these court cases, and it's like, are they doing that here in America? Yes.
Oh, for sure. They're probably piloting it in America and just moving it someplace because, you know, of course, this is their home base. But, yeah, the EU, I'm not a big fan of the EU, but I do love that they're just constantly kicking Facebook and Google in the teeth week after week.
Yeah, and yet I'm a fan of less government, but at the same time, these companies are running roughshod. They're just doing whatever
they
want.
Well, I think the government sort of held their hand to get them to where they are. And then they were like, oh, wait, we've raised a demon child.
Well, in a ray of sunshine in a sea of nothing but gray clouds, a judge has ruled that the FCC's net neutrality repeal will not stop a lawsuit that alleging that Charter throttled Netflix. And so this lawsuit is over actions that Charter took years ago in throttling Netflix traffic. And I think it's pretty clear that whether directly or indirectly, Charter played a role in throttling Netflix's traffic.
Well, I don't understand how these are accusations, because can't Netflix just come forward and be like, yeah, let me show you my checkbook. Here's all the checks we made out, the Charter, to stop throttling us, because they did that.
That will come out in discovery, and so that will be, no doubt those payments are protected by some kind of non-disclosure agreement, like a business agreement for non-disclosure. But that will not survive discovery for this trial. And so we, the public, should get to see exactly what sort of behind-the-scenes backroom dealing was necessary in order for Netflix to get its traffic through.
But, of course, here is Ajit Pai, evil villain. This should be obvious. He came in and he was like, no, your laws don't apply because I changed them. And this judge was like, no, those laws were before you came into power. They will stand.
So this is going to be interesting to watch this case unfold and see what happens. I have a feeling that the companies involved will do everything that they can to prevent anything from being discovered. So we may see an extraordinary settlement here.
If you're Netflix, though, because I don't think Netflix brought this, right? This is from the state. Yeah. So this is the state suing, not Netflix suing. I think Netflix, they're in a weird position.
Yeah.
Because now they need to keep making those payments because there is no net neutrality. So going forward, they don't want to be throttled again. That will destroy them. So yeah, we were extorted, but then so you're trying to come up with a court case that settles that problem with us being extorted. Yet you've made it legal for us to be extorted from now on. So it's a tough spot.
It is a very tough spot. So what you're saying is that this was not Comcast. It was
Charter.
Charter, yeah.
Spectrum.
So
they bought them later, I think.
Charter could come in and say, okay, you know what, Netflix? It was wrong of us to charge you. Here's double your money back for this, you know, period of time that we were charging you a couple of years ago. Oh, by the way, the money that you have to pay us now has just gone up 200%.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there was some stuff mixed in here about the up to speeds as well.
Yeah.
Which now I think is legal again, right?
Yep. So. That is all completely fine. This is also from the time period where when you enabled a VPN on your connection, you magically got better speeds depending on which VPN endpoint you chose, because instead of taking the direct route to Netflix, you took the indirect route to Netflix, which should tell you that the ISP is deliberately doing some shenanigans on their network to cripple Netflix.
Which they surely are now.
Yes. So it's a fun and exciting time. Bad news for Microsoft. A lot of bad news for Microsoft this week. Skype has a really bad security bug that has been reported, but it cannot be fixed without a massive code rewrite. So this is something that is very serious. There's really not a lot of technical details, but
well, it was during the update. Yeah. You could place a DLL in a certain folder during a Skype update, and it didn't confirm anything about that DLL other than the file name. So it just was like, oh, here's the DLL I needed, and that could get you system level privileges.
You know what's really scary about this is really similar to the attack vector that the CIA used for Notepad++. There was like an input plugin for Notepad++ or something like that, and the CIA had specifically co-opted that DLL, and it was a similar DLL injection where, you know, it was just a basic innocuous loophole in the software that was used by the intelligence community to do stuff. I wonder if Russia is accusing the Notepad++ people of being, you know, horrible shills for things. Or like a state-sponsored whatever, because the CIA co-opted Notepad++.
I wonder if, you know, does Russia, do we have any Russian viewers? Do they have the same kind of like public awareness campaign so you don't use American products? But the interesting thing about the Skype story, like you say, we've seen attacks like that before. But Microsoft has come out and they're like, we're not fixing it. We're going to fix it in the next version of Skype, but there will be no security update. So,
woo, free reign for hackers. All right. Yeah,
I guess don't upgrade Skype until the next.
Pirates have cracked Microsoft's UWP protection, 5 layers of DRM defeated. So this is the Windows Store, you know, undefeatable copy protection. Yeah, no wonder games for Windows runs like crap. It's got 5 layers of DRM.
Yeah, they compared it to Denuvo, where it's running virtual machines and trying to sandbox things to keep them protected. And these guys were like, yeah, that's a huge hit performance. It's crazy. And they've actually defeated it. It was one game. I think it was like some crazy, like...
irrelevant, silly game.
What was the name of that? It was one of those like farming games or something like that, or zoo or something. It's something that nobody cares about. Very few people care about, I would say. But a big milestone in terms of Microsoft really wants that Windows games, Windows Store. what was that we were going to try? But it's that...
the Pirates game.
Sea of Thieves.
Sea of Thieves.
It's like, oh, Windows game? Not sure about that.
Microsoft's hubris strikes again. And Microsoft's hubris will bite them in the butt on this Skype thing for sure.
Yeah, so good news, I guess. Now, of course, like many cracks, you cannot be connected to the internet. So modern games, that's a big problem.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Sea of Thieves games is a multiplayer affair, right? So yeah. A big hit like that won't be affected, but still, it's a win for the anti-DRM people.
Speaking of bad news for Microsoft, Windows 10, Google has exposed how malicious sites can exploit Microsoft Edge to fool users into doing things. And the really exciting thing about this story is that these are things that are sort of by design with Edge. So like if you're into web development and you want to do things like animated SVGs or targeting SVG elements with CSS, IE Edge doesn't do a lot of things. And Microsoft's like, you know what? We're not going to do those things by design. And it's just like, Jesus, Microsoft, come on. And yeah. This is another example of that. But from a security standpoint,
it has to do with how they use JavaScript and you know, recompile it to run in their native thing. You can get away with some stuff based on that. But again, Microsoft has said we are. Google gives them 90 days, so it's like, hey, bro, we found this problem, fix it, and we're not going to go public for 90 days. And Microsoft didn't hit the deadline. They're saying mid-March. But a JavaScript attack is something I think that's very, you know, like
easy.
People are going to go after that hard. It's easy, and it's easy to trick you into. I mean, all they have to do is get you to click a link or go to a web page that you weren't expecting, or buy an ad on an unsuspecting ad platform.
Yeah, most people don't realize that with the lack of Flash, you can totally deliver JavaScript through ads. Now, some ad platforms limit the amount of JavaScript that you can load, but JavaScript can load more JavaScript from somewhere else. So even though you've got a limited amount of JavaScript that you're allotted in an ad, you can definitely load more JavaScript from somewhere else. A little bit of a problem. Speaking of things that have leaked, 119,000 passport and photo IDs of FedEx customers have been found on an unsecured Amazon server. So this week in leaky S3 buckets.
We haven't had one for, I think, most of February has been, there's been no AWS, have they?
January, February are usually pretty slow for just about everything.
Even the thieves take the time off.
They're vacationing in Malta.
This is another one of those situations where someone bought the, who was this, FedEx?
Yeah.
This company? Yeah, they bought, FedEx bought another company. And it was one of those deals where they just bought everything and somebody just walked away from a really insecure system and nobody audited it. So it isn't that FedEx built something that was insecure. They bought something that was insecure.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to definitely see some court cases where it's like, how much should you be responsible if you buy something that's insecure and then someone...
And they just don't do anything with it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I abandoned that S3 bucket. It wasn't mine anymore. I don't know. I think we reported on this once before, but the details are really sketchy. This article has a lot more details and how to find out if you're affected and that kind of stuff. So be sure to check that out if you have done a lot of business with FedEx.
I think the guy... that's this story.
A hacker has wiped a spyware company's servers again.
Again? Motherboard making a small error there. How does that not get reported?
Maybe that was the name of the company. The first time I read this, I was like, is that the name of the company that makes the spyware?
No, I don't think so. Maybe it's some new meme that we're not hip to.
It's like phone something?
Well, this is spyware, but it's not the spyware that you're used to. It's spyware that you actually purchase and implant on someone else's devices to spy on them. Like a loved one or your children. A lot of it's marketed toward children, but of course, you know, if you've got a cheating wife...
Well, that's how your government knows it loves you, is because it's put spyware on everything.
So, pretty shady stuff. You can make arguments about whether or not you think that should be legal. But anyway, this hacker, decidedly not a fan of it. He had previously found a key embedded in the code. That was the API key. And he was like, I wonder, yes, he could do whatever he wanted with that API key. So he started deleting things. And then a year passed, and now he's back. And they encrypted the key this time, but he managed to unencrypt it pretty easily. And now
nice.
He's deleting more stuff.
Why does the API key let you delete stuff? Usually it's only like add or insert.
I'm pretty sure it just calls all the member functions. Now, the motherboard, I think, was the website that did that. They reached out to the company, and the company was like, no, nothing's being deleted. So then they reached back out to this guy. And he was like, set up an account and upload pictures. And they uploaded pictures of the shoes, and he was like, yes, I see your shoes. So. And then he deleted the shoes.
Nice. This single character message can crash your iPhone, so bad news for Apple as well in terms of security. Yeah. How is this a thing?
It's one of the Indian languages. It's a character from one of the Indian languages. And the hilarious thing is, because the message, like if the phone sees that message at all or tries to render that message at all, it just nopes out. It just dies. And so you can't delete it. You have to plug your phone in to delete it through a desktop somehow.
Nice.
It's hilarious.
Good job, Apple. How is that even a thing?
I don't know. Pro tip, if you're somebody who's testing that kind of thing, make sure that you text message the entire alphabet. Not just hello world.
In all the character sets. There is a difference between UTF-8 and UTF-8 multibyte and UTF-8 four character multibyte, because that's a thing too. Other bad news, macOS, you can defeat a lot of macOS security by just taking screenshots, using the API to take screenshots, because, you know, if someone is using like the Apple keyring thing and or they're looking at something secure there, you can just set up your software to take a screenshot and then turn the screenshot back into text, and that totally works fine.
Yeah, so of course they would know that there would be a performance hit, and they would probably notice the bandwidth if you were just like streaming constant screenshots. So instead, they use the on-screen character recognition and just stream the text back to whoever. And all apps can do this because, of course, we talked about before, certain apps, just to prove that you're you when you do certain things, will take your picture or snap the screen or something like that. And so
yeah,
any app that you install, just remember that whoever wrote that app can look at your screen whenever they want.
Yeah, it's really another thing that's really nuts that macOS does, at least the more recent versions, the on-screen keyboard operates with a higher level of privilege. So some types of keyboard keystrokes you can't artificially simulate through the API, but you can simulate a mouse click onto the on-screen keyboard, which will then send the keystroke into a privileged container. Yay, macOS. Apple doesn't think that's a security vulnerability because that's by design, but seems like a security vulnerability to me.
Yeah. And well, the keyboard's always going to be in the same place. Mm-hmm. So that would be real easy to just build a little library.
Why, Apple? Why you do this? Why? You need to get some operating system engineers. Well, no, I'm sure you've got operating system engineers. They're just all working on the iPhone OS. You need more people on the Unix desktop OS, or Linux is going to eat your lunch, or BSD on the desktop or something.
Come on. You can't carry a Linux PC around in a leather bag and look cool.
Facebook is suggesting that mobile users protect themselves by downloading a Facebook-owned app that tracks their mobile usage. The trick with this is that Facebook is not making it clear that they actually own the app that they're instructing you to download, and it actually spies on you.
Onavo is the name, or Onavo, I don't know how you pronounce it, but the thing that they're not making clear is this is protecting you from everybody but Facebook. Whatever you do through this VPN, Facebook is spying on. This is their holy grail. Because, of course, we saw the court cases. They use those like buttons as like a little army of spies. And most websites have them, so they know what you're up to. But in this case, they don't need that anymore. You're using a VPN, and they're just simply...
They can just capture the traffic.
Yeah, they're just building your advertising profile as you go to wherever you go on the web.
Yeah, I like how it's just a button that says, would you like protection? And it's like, protection? Who wouldn't want protection? I mean, that sounds great.
Yeah, so don't do that. Well, don't use Facebook. But if you must use Facebook, don't use that thing.
Google has removed the view image button from search results to make pics harder to steal. So this is a tongue-in-cheek headline. The view image is not going to make pictures harder to steal, but Getty Images has been complaining to Google a lot. And so this is probably a response to Getty Images complaining to Google that, hey, this view image button is not good, and we think it makes it easy to steal images.
So, of course, steal means view. Like, downloading the image is how you look at it. You know, a lot of people, I guess a lot of people don't understand that, but certainly people in the copyright world, I'm sure they understand it, but they sort of make this distinction. Like, no, you must view it in the context that we want you to view it. And that's what they've done. They replaced it, or, well, it already had the visit page, but you actually have to go to the website where they found the image in order to get the image. Of course, you can right-click on that preview image if you just want to do that. It's not always the biggest size, though.
The really big news this week, Google has rolled out ad blocking in Chrome, and it actually has made it to where we can almost do the news with this ludicrous number of tabs that we have at the top that you can't see. Without it crashing, almost. It's doing better. Still not great, but it's doing better.
Normally, the way we do it is we load all the tabs, and people complain about ad blocker. We don't use an ad blocker because we make money from ads on YouTube, so it's a hypocrisy thing, right? Like, we would like you to not use an ad blocker just like these people would, so we let us serve you ads while we block the ads from the people whose sources we're using to show. Yeah, it's... We're not going to do that. So what we go through is we load all the tabs and Chrome grinds to a halt. Then we use one tab and we reload them all at once And it's okay because the tracking scripts kick in after other things have loaded. Today we didn't have to do that.
It's amazing.
So, now it has been intermittently crashing every tab. But we can work through that.
I just want to point out that the ads from AdSense, Google's ad program, they are completely unaffected. It's only the other ad platforms.
It is kind of funny that it's, you know, like the ad company is giving you an ad blocker, but not for their stuff. So
Facebook is shedding users left and right. How long, like what's the over under before we see a psychotic break from Zuckerberg?
That could be because he's got the money
yeah.
to like really go super villain and do something crazy.
But they lost 2.8 million users under 25 last year, and 2018 is probably going to be the same or worse.
And the biggest loss was 14 to 17,
yeah.
something like that. So those are your, of course, under 25 is, you. That's all good. But 14 to 17, those are kind of like the people who, if you can groom them in your product as they grow up, and then when they start making money, you've got them. That's the best way to be.
Disney, Hasbro. Everybody remembers Transformers and He-Man.
Oh, look what they did to Transformers. And look how much money they got from it. Like they planted that seed. They didn't know what they were doing. And then years later, they got so much fruit from it. Now, that is from a third-party market watch type site. So this is not Facebook's numbers, but these people, this is what they predict is happening with Facebook based on whatever metric they're using. Yes. I don't find it hard to believe.
Definitely a rough year for advertising in general as people become more hardened to advertising, and advertisers seem to think that doubling down on the invasiveness and pervasiveness of advertising is the way to solve that problem.
But didn't Facebook post profits this year?
Yeah, yeah.
So that just goes to show you that it's not about how many users they've got. It's about how much data they can mine from those users and sell. And they're doing very well with that.
Kind of like when Freud discovered psychological manipulation in a world that had not seen that previously. And it's like, we can convince women to smoke. We can convince people to eat pork bellies. It will be fine. Story for another time. AMD is sending...
Spoiler alert, it wasn't fine.
It definitely wasn't fine. But AMD is sending out free processors to solve the firmware flashing catch-22, which is actually probably fine. So the deal is... The Ryzen 3 2200 and the Ryzen 5 2500, these have Vega graphics built in, but they're new CPUs. But they fit in existing AM4 motherboards. Unless you pick up a motherboard that has a flash BIOS on it that supports those CPUs, it's not going to boot. So you could potentially buy a motherboard and processor that are physically compatible, but because the software is out of date on the motherboard, you can't boot and you can't update the software on the motherboard to make it compatible with the CPU. There are some motherboards that let you flash from a USB stick without a processor, so it's not an issue for those motherboards. But for other motherboards that have the problem, AMD is going to send you out a really cheap, barely functional, super crappy AM4 CPU to help you get your motherboard flashed.
Really cheap. And you do have to send it back. But that's really cool, I think. That's a great way to solve that problem. I mean, it's annoying because you have to build the PC... Install one update and then tear it down and build it back again. So, but hey, that's better than nothing, I guess.
That is better than nothing. And yes, AMD would like you to return that super, super crappy processor.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the only reason they want it back is so they can send it to the next guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about. And they probably are like, how are we going to, we got all this crap in storage. We don't want to pay the cost to have it recycled. What are we going to do with it? Just mail them out. Enough people won't send it back. We'll be done with them.
Now, you can't avoid the problem completely if you get 4 series motherboards, like 470 or the equivalent, but those are not out yet. So if you're kind of scared of PC building, you can wait a little bit to get that. If you have a retailer like Fry's or Micro Center or other local retailer, they have a sticker. If you have a local computer shop, they shouldn't charge you much for updating your motherboard for you. And like I say, a lot of motherboards, especially the higher-end motherboards, have a way to flash without a processor. You just have to look in your manual. So, don't know. We've got some of those CPUs on the way. They're not here yet, but I can't wait to play with them because Ryzen 3 and Ryzen 5 with integrated graphics, especially with the way that GPU prices are right now, it'll be a really. It seems like it'll be a really great way to build a good entry-level PC. But that remains to be seen until I get my hands on it. So, we'll see. AI is helping seismologists detect earthquakes that they would otherwise miss. We had a major earthquake in Mexico, and I don't know if it was an AI system, but they had like a 90-second warning to Mexico City from the earthquake.
the idea here is it's signal to noise. Like, we can monitor the ground, but with these small earthquakes, you really can't tell. It's like, is that just regular weirdness going on?
Is that the beginnings of something bad? Yeah. Or?
So what the AI is sort of a neural net that's trying to learn the difference between background geological noise and actual earthquakes. And so I don't think they've got it doing that yet, but that is the proposal of, and they suspect it will be able to detect magnitude -1. I didn't know that scale went negative, but you know, really small earthquakes. And like you say, try to learn patterns of like, oh wait, this might be becoming something serious.
Does anybody out there can verify that we're feeding it data from Yellowstone? Because I'm really worried about the super caldera at Yellowstone. Next 5 to 10 years, like, can we get like a 2-year warning?
Well, I don't think we have data from Pompeii.
We're probably going to shut those listening stations down for budgetary reasons. Woo, America. Yeah. It's just... this could be really good. It's a really... I mean, you see AI everywhere. So that's sort of a lot of fun. This one, neural networks are everywhere. Yeah, this is what sort of leads into this.
This is about the, they've built a chip that it's, so the, in neural nets, the bottleneck is moving from memory to processor.
Oh yeah, data locality.
So what they've done with these is they've tried to mimic the brain synapses, and they've built an analog way of processing in the memory itself. So there is no move from memory to processor. You've got like this weird analog thing, and it works with voltages and like multiplying them. Because in a neural net, you take from the level below it, you take it up, and then based on the truth level of it or whatever, I guess, you multiply it by a certain amount. So they're just doing that with voltages and electricity and then moving it on. And they claim it's 95% faster and lower power.
It'll be interesting to see a commercial product based on this. Until I can run TensorFlow or OpenML or something on it, it's dead to me. I don't understand.
Well, these are targeted toward mobile. So like with most mobile apps that do any kind of AI, you're just doing it on a cloud somewhere, moving it back.
I kept expecting it to say that Google's image processing AI, Google's got some kind of an AI image processing chip in the Pixel 2 that they only just recently activated with their last Android update. And I kept expecting this to say, oh, there's a prototype of this in that. But no.
I think it's too new. Yeah. So, but that would be cool. It would be cool, but it's also, you got to think about the terrifying aspect of it. Like those Chinese glasses, AI glasses, those are going to get a lot smaller. Maybe it's just a lapel pin, you know? So on a rainy day, you can't immediately notice who is scanning you.
Look into my lapel pin, Mr. Anderson. you know what else has become the holy grail of AI? Raising pigs. I've been on a pig farm before, and let me tell you, it's not a pleasant experience.
That's almost like they're filthy animals. I was surprised, and one of the most amazing things about this story, China is the number one producer, exporter, and importer of pork. Like, what, couldn't the exporters and the importers get together? And like, hey, guys, let's just solve a logistics problem right now.
I don't know about pork, but there was a thing I was working on once, and with chicken, I think India is like that with chicken. And so India imports a crazy amount of dark meat chicken, but they export a crazy amount of white meat chicken. And so America is all about the white meat chicken, and India is all about the dark meat chicken. And so we exchange chicken parts, which seems really crazy. It's like half a chicken goes here, and the other half of the chicken goes there.
So you think they're eating like the hooves and the faces and stuff, and they're sending us the bellies so we can make bacon out of it? But the AI part of this is they are going to mark all these pigs. I guess they brand them. Like, they said mark them, but I'm pretty sure that's branding. And the AI, I guess it's got like it sits up high somewhere, and it just monitors the pig's health by looking at the marks and sort of noticing, oh, it's growing well. Or they've also got microphones, so if they hear the pigs coughing, their discoloration, whatever. This AI is basically tending the pigs because there's so many of them. And if it feels like a pig is, something's wrong with it, it just sends a message. It's like, hey, come and check out this pig with this marking.
You know, there's a lot of similarities between the pig pens and veal fattening farms and the bog standard American work cubicle. So, you know, I'm imagining an AI where it's like Wilbur comes in and it's like, good morning, Wilbur. You know, how are you doing today? Oh, I see that you've gained 0.6 pounds. You are almost ready for the harvest. This is great. And that same AI is running. It's like, you know, Mr. Wilbur comes into his cube and it's like, good morning, Wilbur. I see that your productivity is up 0.6%.
You remember the AI that's going to monitor people in hospitals so they don't die? It's almost exactly the same because it's collecting all these different kinds of metrics from what the pigs are up to and what the patients are up to. And trying to decide, you know, things about them. So, basically the same software.
I can't wait for somebody to inject that into Cortana. It's like Cortana the Pig Farmer. That sounds amazing. That's our title for this week, Cortana the Pig Farmer.
And, you know, of course, with Facebook and all that stuff, that the data is going to be there. So, it's going to be real easy to apply that AI to our daily lives.
You sit down at your desk and there's an envelope there and you open it. It's just some pills. And it's like, oh, yes, Wilbur, I noticed that your Facebook status said that, you know, something, something, something. You've been increased your allotment of happy pills for this week by 17%.
Well, it's, so your postings on Facebook are down, you know, against the average. And they're sadder than usual. So you get both Wellbutrin and Adderall. So it's like, let's get those numbers up.
We're going to see it within our lifetime, folks. Yeah. Isn't it exciting? We joke about it, but there's at least three or four people watching that are taking notes for their novel that they're working on.
Which won't even be, you know, like a future novel by the time they get it out. By the time it's proofread, we'll already be there.
And like we say, AI being used to fight fatal infections in hospitals, they're turning to AI and they're turning to algorithms to track that and keep track of it in order to cut the rate of infection.
Yes, the C. diff infection, which is a huge problem in hospitals. And I don't know if they monitor, I think, where you go. So they know what the high risk zones are. And it monitors the patient's vitals and stuff like that. And again, just puts all these things together to try to figure out who might be infected and then deal with them.
The feds have charged a 24-year-old Chicago trader in the first crypto fraud case. Now, I read this and I expected to have all sort, like, to walk away with all, it's like, all the prosecutors horribly misunderstand this and no crime has occurred. And like, no, I think actually a crime probably has occurred here.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. This guy was addicted to gambling and he was doing the crypto gambling, like the crypto casinos, those dark web crypto casinos. Don't do that. There is no, some of them claim that they use like the blockchain, their own blockchain to mathematically prove that the numbers you got were correct. But do you think this guy was able to like really parse that and prove? Anyway, he lost big. But he worked with a company that did crypto, so he just kept moving out of the company's wallet into his own wallet and, you know, throwing good money after bad, trying to win back his losses, and he never did.
He never did, no. And so, but they've only charged him with one count of wire fraud, which, I mean, again, yeah, having read a lot of these cases, it always seems like they're coming really, really hard. They're coming down really hard on the disproportionately. And in this case, based on the way that the article is written and the information that was in the article.
Well, he didn't have to, quote unquote, hack anything.
Yeah.
Because he had access to it. This would be the same as if you were, you know, you had some sort of power of attorney or something. Or you had, you were a CPA and you're just writing yourself checks out of the account.
Yeah. Woo. Yeah. Atari is jumping on the crypto bandwagon. So I my eyes glazed over at the headline, honestly.
It's
because why?
They didn't give any details about exactly how it's going to work, but Atari, every time a company puts the word blockchain or announces something about blockchain,
the blockchain tea company,
they mention that one. This happens. So Atari maybe has just jumped in on this, but they've announced that they're going to come out. Now, remember, they were talking about their new console, but we haven't seen anything about it yet.
There were some other videos and stuff on it, I don't know if it's available at retail yet. I don't think it is.
No, definitely not. But anyway, they claim that they're going to bring in an Atari coin. So it's somehow this coin is going to be factored into the games, maybe. I don't know, but people are excited.
Also, big news this week was the headlines everywhere was that Coinbase is erratically overcharging some users and emptying their bank accounts. But it turns out this was actually a Visa problem, not Coinbase.
So what was happening was you would make an order, and it wasn't that it charged you too much. It was that a day or two later, it would charge you again, and then again, and then again. And people were, you know, obviously freaked out. You know, there were some people, and you can't forgive Visa for this, but some people were like, hey, I made a $300 order and you charged me twice, and that overdrew my checking account, and I got charged these extra fees. You need to pay these extra fees. If you've only got $600 in your checking account, should you really be investing in Bitcoin? Maybe they used a sort of a airlock account. That might be smart with Coinbase. But then, of course, when they do overcharge you, you get those overdraft fees.
Yeah, and you can't possibly turn that off. It's like, I don't want overdraft protection. Yeah, just decline it. I was like, no, sir, it doesn't work like that. So, but yeah, Visa has officially, like their first statement kind of was ambiguous, and everybody assumed that Coinbase was at fault, but Visa has confirmed that Coinbase was not at fault for overcharging users. Now, the more interesting question here is, why was Visa singling out all of the transactions from Coinbase in the first place?
Oh, they didn't come out and say it, but you can sort of read between the lines here. They were internally making sure that any business done with Coinbase was recategorized as cryptocurrency, because they are definitely keeping track of that, and they're probably going to start treating that differently. And whoever was in charge of merging and moving regular transactions over to the cryptocurrency category screwed up. So you ended up getting charged again after they moved you.
That seems really scary that they're doing that with transactions in general, let alone doing it with cryptocurrency transactions.
Oh, well, you know, when you like, you ever look at your credit card statement and it's like fuel, groceries.
Yeah.
So they know based on where you're shopping. So there's going to be a new category there.
Remind me why this is better than cash again.
Because terrorists. Criminals.
LoopX startup pulls its ICO exit scam and disappears with $4.5 million. So yes, another week goes by. There's another cryptocurrency scam.
Yeah, these people raised $4.3 million of their desired 12 and then just deleted everything and can't be found. And there's really, like, all these people are affected. Like, all right, who do we tell? Who do we go to here? And it's like, well, there is nobody to go to. I suspect this kind of thing is going to end up, we're going to have like a regulatory crypto. It's going to be bad. It's going to be the FCC, but for crypto. And the guy running it is going to be like a former Coinbase employee, just like Ajit Pai worked for Verizon. And it's going to be bad. The other thing about that story that stood out to me, kind of makes me angry, is they mentioned that another website had done this, and they said that website went offline, only leaving one, how would they call it, like offensive word, and the offensive word was penis. Is penis offensive?
There goes our monetization this week. Be sure to join us on Patreon, because
I'll tell you who's behind that: the matriarchy.
Switching gears really quickly before the downvotes come. The people...
We don't have any female viewers.
People are walking into glass at the new Apple headquarters, apparently. So this, I tried to substantiate this. There's several reports of this, but I can't. This might be fake news. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, they said that not only were people walking into the glass. So it's like a, you know, super hipster building. Even the walls are made of glass.
Yeah. You should look up pictures of it, because it's like a spaceship.
Yeah. But what the thing, like the really amazing thing here is the reports are just the ones that had to seek medical attention. So they're walking into the glass so hard that maybe you think it's like you're power walking. It's like, oh, I'm an Apple executive. I power walk. And then just power walk your ass right into a glass wall or whatever.
Or because you're paying attention to a phone or something.
Yeah,
like that.
There's probably a lot of that.
I don't know why, but we've been sucked into reporting a lot on the ID card situation in India, and so we just couldn't leave this story out. Apparently the cows are now going to start getting ID cards as well. So this is, we've reported on the numerous security and fraud issues around the national ID card. I can't imagine this is going to end well with these cows.
Well, I was not, I mean, I understood the whole Hindu cow thing, like, you know, on some level, but I didn't realize there are vigilante groups. And if you're suspected of treating a cow poorly, they will hunt you down and beat you. And that's hilarious. And, well, unless you're getting beaten out. But so the ID system, you'd think like, oh yeah, well, we have an ID system here in America, right? We tag our cows just so, because you got to tell who owns them, right?
Yeah. That's something about mad cow disease.
Well, not just that, but when you sell them, it's like, this is an unauthorized cow. You stole this cow because it doesn't have the ear tag, and we have a whole system. But over there, you know, they don't eat the cows. They don't slaughter the cows. slaughtering is one of the things that they're using this for. It's like, we're going to ID this cow, and when we come back next year, it better still be here, and it better be happy. So, they have a lot of cows, too.
Interesting. So, Ajit Pai, wow, he's like three or four stories this week, but so there have been freedom of information requests to the FCC for their internal communications with regard to the gloating supervillain, as you would describe it.
Well, they had a dinner or something, and he made jokes about being a Verizon puppet. Of course, he is, you know. So he's sort of like it's that thing where somebody accuses you of something you did, you're like, oh yeah, right, I really did that. Yeah. So somebody, Freedom of Information Act, it's like, give us the jokes, show us all the communication about those jokes. And they won't give it up. I don't
know. They're afraid. One of the reasons cited was that they're afraid that the fact that people could get access to this communication would remove some of the candor that the commission currently enjoys with communication.
It's Why? Shocking. It's shocking. It's, and of course, every piece of evidence points to him being exactly that. And I don't think it's smart for him to do that. I don't think it's smart for him to ever draw attention to that. I think he's just pretend that it doesn't exist, because you really don't want people to even be thinking about that at all, because it's so obvious.
The whole little finger cap, just evil, just...
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Well, he needs like a big curly mustache.
Well, he's got a giant Reese mug. Does that count? Is that like the modern equivalent of a...
I don't think we need to drag down the good name of Reese.
Oh, you know what else changed this week? FreeBSD's code of conduct. This has been a surprisingly, without really even getting into it, like, the change to the code of conduct here has been news everywhere in the open source community.
Well, it's scroll down to it. So show that the bulleted list there. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 physical contact and simulated physical contact. Like star hug star or star back rub star. That one, I think, is the one that's a little weird for people. Like, you know, 5 characters that can't possibly harm anybody, but that's totally not allowed anymore. And the real story is what led to that. Because that, I want to know so badly.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of don't even want to touch this with a 10-foot pole, but the bullet item in my mind is probably don't be a jerk. Like, don't be a jerk. It's like, you know, if you're being a jerk. And I feel like that naming, like putting that on the code of conduct is only going to lead to people being even more of a jerk, because it's like, well, okay, you're giving me this very long and well-defined set of rules. I'm going to find something that goes against the spirit of the rules, but is not technically against the letter of
the
rules.
Well, I mean, I would immediately go to star, firm handshake star.
No, I was thinking star, absent-minded gaze star.
Stare at chest star. Well, it's too bad Chris is not here this week, because one of the other ones is stalking or following. Mm. And that would be tough for her.
She's already got a fairly substantial following of stalkers. It's kind of impressive, really.
But the other ones, you know, you see the misgendering and the dead naming and all that stuff. And it's a big, I think this is a huge problem, because open source is for everybody. But in the name of making it good for everybody, I think we're excluding a lot of people who would be good at open source software. Because let's face it, you know, there's a certain kind of person who's really good at this kind of thing. And the one thing that they're generally pretty bad at is social interactions.
So they just don't know.
Yeah, they're going to... It's like D'Amore. I don't think that he really understood the implications of what he was doing. That was the truth as he understood it. And I don't think he foresaw how much it would bother people.
Yeah.
And so you're probably going to hamstring some of your open source efforts by letting these, you know, SJW Nazis in there setting up all these rules. But that's the way the world's going, so get used to it.
I think Brian Lunduk had a really long video about this, and he's just sort of been riding that that popularity wave with this. But I mean, it seems like you could summarize this whole bullet list as don't be unreasonable and don't be a jerk.
I really, maybe even simplify it more than that, is just focus on the project. Like, don't talk about anything else. And it's sad that we have to go there. But I think that is where we have to go, is just focus on the code and solving the problems and keep all personal stuff out of it.
This would be like the Drupal project needing to adopt a bullet item that's like, by the way, no one on the project is allowed to be into the weird sexual fetish stuff.
Well, that's the thing about it. You don't even have to, like, his thing was on Twitter. It was not about the project. So if you star hug star some girl on Twitter, will you then be out of FreeBSD?
Well, I mean, I'm star absent-minded gay star. Does that fall afoul of the rules too?
Well, but then, so let's say that you go out to a bar and you give a girl some unwanted attention. She happens to be a BSD developer. Do you get kicked off the project? It's such a weird thing.
How would one, like, what's the protocol for initiating, like, say that you work with somebody on a project, like, there seems like, I mean, it's just part of the social protocol. There needs to be some kind of signaling protocol to be like, are you interested in this type of relationship? I like working with you. I would like to explore a relationship with you outside of work. Do you have to do it in that sort of antiseptic language, or is it like star question mark star?
I think you use Git. I think that's the accepted standard of how you do that.
Git push star question mark star?
Because there has to be a record of it.
Right? Okay, so we're using Git for affirmative consent now. It's like Git push consent question mark. It's like Git pull, Git commit, Git push. Yes, you have consent. It's like, ah, it's right there. It's in the commit history. No amending. It's like amending history is not allowed. Not allowed on this project.
You know, of course, society is constantly going through countercultures, and that's how we get, you know, you had like the 40s and the 50s and all that, and then that led to the 60s and the 70s. And I guess sort of like the Bush era, you know, neo-conservative stuff led to where we are now. But what's coming next? It's going to be bad. It's going to get real bad.
So are you saying that things like this is really like the equivalent of the big hair of the 80s?
Well, no, because it was more the 90s and the early 2000s. And we had, you know, the Bush administration and that kind of thing, I think, is what we're the counterculture of that is hitting now. Sort of like that intolerance of anything gay or non-Christian or whatever, you know. Nuke those terrorists. We're still doing that, of course.
Some of those hairstyles were pretty cool, though. I mean, I could go for a mohawk. That would be
I don't think anything about the 80s hair was good. I don't know how hairstyle correlates to counterculture. I mean, certainly in the 60s and 70s, the long hair was the thing. But I'm more worried about this kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. What is the polar opposite of this, but even worse? Because we're gonna get that, and it's gonna be scary.
I don't know. You wasted another perfectly good hour listening to level one. I think that's the last story. Is that the last story? Oh no, there's one more.
Oh,
but it was an out of memory tab. Oh no.
Oh no, you've circled back.
I've circled back. So we ran out of memory just as we got to the last story. Oh, with the ads blocked, Google Chrome has saved us.
It's an improvement. I still see a T-Mobile ad, so I guess they're on the. Allowed ads. The other thing about that story, if we just want to go back to the Google story, they're actually working from a blacklist. So every time it loads a page, it's looking at its internal blacklist to decide what ads aren't okay. So I wonder, could you slip Google a few dollars and get your domain off that list?
It's interesting. Isn't that the approach that Adblock Plus took?
It was basically a blacklist. Of course, you know, the alternatives were already there, and everybody just jumped ship. So
uBlock has taken over the universe for sure. I don't know. It's what interesting times we live in. Perhaps we can get some more commentary. It'll be fun. I should mark our calendars. We should revisit the policy change in a year, and then look back in a year over what all has, like, 2019, the end of February 2019. What has happened with the project as a result of the policy change? And is that something that we see in a lot of other open source projects? Because I think it is. I think that there have been several other projects that have made changes like this before BSD. And if the motive for the change is, look, we just want to get on with the project, then I don't think that's unreasonable.
Well, it could, like I say, the problem is you're going to be excluding people who aren't malicious. They're just bad at socializing and They just don't understand other humans enough to navigate those waters. I think that's the drawback. So you have to have a little bit of leeway. Although I do imagine that probably what prompted this was there was an uncomfortable conversation. It's like, look, we're not going to have that kind of relationship. I don't want to talk to you outside of this. Can we please just be professional? And it was like, oh yeah, totally. And then the next morning it was star hug star.
So. I'm going to be your BFF forever. Large eyes, too wide smile. I don't know. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody on Patreon. Thank you, everybody that's bought stuff in the Level 1 store. And we'll see you next week.
Oh, we should mention that the Everybody on Patreon podcast is up.
So
if you are a Patreon, but you're like a dollar Patreon and you don't ever look at the site, you just threw that dollar at us. We did a podcast for everybody, a teaser podcast. Usually it's the 19-plus people, but everybody gets it this month, and that's up.
It is just a podcast filled with nonsense, not about technology. It's just us doing nothing for an hour. It's not terrible. It's okay.
Actually, I think it's an hour 15.
It varies, much like this program. We'll see you next week.